Chapter 32. The first day of shooting generally sets the tone for the entire movie. Everyone on the set takes special note of how well the director interacts with the actors, the cinematographer, the crew, and the staff. The quality of that communication sends out signals as to whether or not the production will prove to be smooth sailing or rough going. "If the fish stinks from the head," Frankie said, "people will smell it almost immediately." Standing alongside Carter Hansen and a handful of other local dignitaries, who were also watching the proceedings, Jesse realized anew how tedious the process of filmmaking actually was. Frankie had described what was taking place as a tracking shot. The camera was mounted on a wheeled dolly that was pulled rapidly backward along a specially constructed section of what resembled train track. The moving dolly would precede the action, allowing the camera to photograph the scene from in front of it, all the while moving rapidly apace with it. They were rehearsing the first scene. A young camera assistant stood beside the dolly mount and placed the clapperboard directly in front of the camera. It displayed the title of the film, the name of the director, the scene number, and the time of day. "A Taste of Arsenic, Scene 1, Rehearsal," the assistant shouted. Then he slammed the top of the clapperboard onto its base. "Action!" called the director. Marisol burst through the front door of a large office building, then stopped. She looked around. She reached into her purse and pulled out a cell phone. She looked at it, then she looked up. A thought registered in her eyes. She walked hurriedly toward a car that was parked in front of the building. When she reached it, she opened the driver's side door and got in. The director yelled, "Cut!" "That's a cut," the assistant director called out. "Reset, everyone back to first positions." People returned to their original places and prepared for another take. While this was going on, Jesse spotted Crow approaching Marisol, accompanied by a little girl, who looked to be about 7 or 8, and an older woman, most likely the girl's mother. He watched as Crow introduced the girl to Marisol, who stood beside her while the mother photographed the two of them together. The child, all smiles, shook hands with Marisol. Then she and her mother hurried away. After a few moments, Jesse saw Marisol turn to Crow in a rage. Everyone present could hear what she was saying. "How dare you bring strangers to me when I'm acting?" Marisol said to him. "You ruined the shot."
"The child played hooky in order to see you," Crow said.
"She destroyed my concentration."
"Well, if it makes any difference, you have a fan for life."
"Tell her to get in line."
Marisol stormed away in the direction of her motorhome. She turned back to Crow.
"That was truly stupid," she said. "Never again. Don't ever interrupt me like that again. You hear me?"
Crow didn't say anything.
"Do you understand?"
He nodded. She stepped inside the motorhome and slammed the door behind her. Everyone on the set pretended that what they had just witnessed hadn't occurred. They turned their attention elsewhere and went on with their work. Frankie Greenberg made her way toward Marisol's trailer, stopping only to have a word with Crow.
"I'm sorry," she said to him. "First day is always the toughest. Can you forgive her?"
He grunted.
"Please," Frankie said. "I promise to make it up to you."
Then she turned and walked quickly to the motorhome. She knocked on the door and went inside. Jesse meandered over to where Crow was standing.
"That went well," he said.
Crow didn't say anything.
"Kid freaked her out," Jesse said.
"Nah, she was looking for an excuse."
"An excuse?"
"To remind people that she's the star."
"She needed to do that?"
"You can lay odds that no one will forget what just went down, and they'll pussyfoot around her for the rest of the shoot."
"So why did she storm off?"
"For effect."
"You mean she wasn't upset?"
"No."
"How do you know?"
"She does everything for effect."
"Isn't that a cynical opinion?" Jesse said.
"Cynicism is what floats my boat."
"So you're not thinking of quitting?"
Crow looked at him.
"What, and give up show business?" he said.
Ryan Rooney left the cabin in the late afternoon and drove to Paradise. It was easy to find the convoy of movie vehicles in such a small town. Arriving at the end of the day, amid the hubbub of rap time, would more easily allow him to accomplish what he intended to do. He parked and headed for the base camp. Ryan watched as the various departments packed up their equipment and began loading it into their respective vehicles. Everybody was on the move, which gave him his opening. Unrecognizable, in a blonde wig, dark glasses, and full beard, Ryan headed for the three-banger that housed the assistant director's cubicle. A three-banger is a 20-foot trailer that has been subdivided into three separate rooms. In addition to the AD's office, it also housed a holding section for the extras and an individual dressing room for a member of the supporting cast. As he expected, no one was in the AD's section. At RAP, each of the assistant directors is busy with the distribution of the call sheets and maps for the next day's shoot, as well as providing information about where the various departments could watch the screening of the rushes, the raw footage of that day's work. Ryan slipped inside the trailer and quickly gathered copies of all the production schedules and contact sheets. The schedules detailed every day's workload and its location. The contact sheets listed the local addresses of everyone connected with the movie. He also grabbed a copy of the script. No one noticed him, and then he was gone. He stopped at a Star Time grocery and bought himself a frozen pizza and a six-pack of Rolling Rock. He splurged and also bought a pint of Ben & Jerry's Cherry Garcia ice cream. Then he returned to the cabin.